Will it be fought overseas, or will it affect us here at home? If you are like most folks, you want to be prepared, but can't afford an underground shelter. So what do you do? Did you know that you can use your home as a shelter against fallout and biological or chemical attacks? With a little know-how, it's not that difficult. Sheltering in place, surviving acts of terrorism from biological, chemical, and radioactive fallout, developed by Wayne LeBaron, a health physicist who has served as a specialist in environmental health, communicable diseases, and has worked as a nuclear specialist for the U.S. government, gives you easy-to-follow video instructions and walks you step-by-step through the process of preparing your home as a shelter. Get this critical video every American needs for only $29 plus shipping. Order by calling New Millennium today at 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king, but in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, of course, this next hour, they're going to be those of Peter Hammond, who is with Frontline Fellowship, Christian Ministry in South Africa, which, of course, takes in all of Africa. And Peter comes to the United States every few months, and we always look forward to having him here on our radio programs. And we want to talk today about the tragedy that is unfolding in Rhodesia, the tragedy that is unfolding in South Africa. I lived in South Africa. It was a wonderful country. Yes, they had apartheid, but they were doing away with apartheid. They would have eventually done away with apartheid and brought responsible black leadership in, had the United States not been intent upon bringing a communist regime to power. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, certainly Nelson Mandela is a lifelong communist, as is Mbeki, as are the leaders of the African National Conference, but we can't let the suckers in America know that. And when, of course, Nelson Mandela was inaugurated as president, who was there? Fidel Castro, the communist leaders from throughout the world were there. And, of course, there's a wonderful picture of Nelson Mandela standing in front of a large red communist flag with the hammer and sickle and giving the communist salute. Understand what we've done. We did the same thing in Southwest Africa. We did the same thing in Rhodesia, which we call Zimbabwe today. But we can't let the American people know that the major thrust of American foreign policy is not freedom, but bringing Marxist leaders who will go along with our plan for the New World Order into positions of power. Well, Peter's on the line. Peter, how are you this afternoon? Have a good, safe flight.
Dr. Stan, how are you, sir?
I'm doing just fine, thank you. Well, tell us, certainly, what's going on in Zimbabwe. We've been looking forward to your visit to bring us up to date with what's happening in that tragic nation where the United States State Department insisted that the people of Rhodesia accept a thug, a Marxist thug named Mugabe, who actually, of course, did not win the elections. They had to rig the elections, and then he had to go around terrorizing people to get in power. They had a peaceful transition to a black leadership, and that is not what our State Department wanted. We installed Robert Mugabe, who has brought havoc and horror to that country. Tell us what's going on, Peter.
Well, Dr. Stan, at the moment, it's absolutely horrific. If I could show you the pictures that I've got just on my laptop of people being burned alive and beaten senseless, and what they are told is, this is because you voted for the opposition. We know, if there's any vote, we know who voted for the opposition. You have not voted wisely. Now we're going to teach you how to vote properly. And they beat the people senseless. We are going to burn your homes. They have burned out the homes of many tens of thousands of people. Burned people alive in the streets, pouring gasoline over them and setting them alight. And we've got pictures of the most horrific things. You can imagine how hard it is to get pictures out of a new state Marxist dictatorship like Zimbabwe. So what we see is just the absolute tip of the iceberg.
Well, of course, we're not hearing that over here, Peter. We're hearing, of course, that there is a little bit of violence over there, and that, you know, the police are going around beating up people, but burning people alive, burning down tens of thousands of homes, how could they possibly conceal something like that?
Oh, it's not concealed at all. It's been done absolutely in broad daylight, open. A lot of attacks are taking place at night, too, but the destruction of churches, pastors being tortured, it's absolutely horrific. We've been putting documentation on our frontline.org.za website, and we'll be trying to put up pictures as well that people can actually see what's being done. You know, the brutality of the Mugabe regime over the last 28 years has been beyond anything that you can imagine. Zimbabwe today has got the highest unemployment rate in the world. It's over 85% officially. It's actually worse in reality. They've got the highest inflation rate in the world, 500,000%. Do you know they're now printing $500 million bills? That's half a billion dollars.
Hold that. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Peter Hammond from Frontline Fellowship in South Africa. He's telling us what's going on in Rhodesia. He was born and raised in Rhodesia, although he lives in South Africa today. Well, basically, of course, since Mugabe, you know, lost the election, why, of course, they've gone around, they're burning people alive, and, of course, on the Frontline Fellowship website, you can see the pictures of them burning people alive. I said they burned down tens of thousands of homes, they've beaten the people, saying, you voted the wrong way, next time you'll vote the right way, and, of course, they're going to insist on new elections. Why? Because they lost, they don't want to give up power, and, of course, right there they have Rhodesia, or Zimbabwe as we've chosen to call it, they have 85% unemployment. Now, of course, back, you know, when the wicked white man, was there, why, of course, everybody had a job, and everybody had a plot of land, everybody had a means of at least of making a living. There was no starvation, and people are starving today in that country because the United States insisted that the people put in this Marxist thug. And, of course, Peter was just saying that they're printing bills, the inflation. What's the current inflation rate there?
Officially, 500,000%.
500,000% here, then.
And printing, I've got $1 million and a $10 million bill, but I'm told now they've got $500 million bills. That's a $500 million bill, a single note, which is worth nothing. It's not even worth what one Rhodesian dollar was worth back when I was living there. Which is, in fact, we passed this long time ago, but when I was up there recently, one loaf of bread cost $25 million, and you can just imagine pensioners, their livelihoods destroyed. People are starving. 5 million Zimbabweans have fled from the country. That's about half of the total population have fled across the borders. That's voting with your feet, because they just had to go where they could get food. And this is, of course, the Marxist strategy. If you think of what Stalin did with the dekulakization policy in the Ukraine, burning out the farms and suppressing the people in the Ukraine, and as he said, a few million people dying of starvation is a small price to pay to ensure that communism remains in control of Russia.
In Zimbabwe, you mean?
Well, now I'm talking about what Stalin said in the 1930s, and that's what Mugabe's doing today. And this is what Pol Pot did in Cambodia, taking all the people out of the Khmer Rouge, clearing out the people of Phnom Penh in Cambodia, and 40% of the population of Cambodia were killed in the killing fields of Cambodia. This is communism.
All right, hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment. Remember, we, the United States, installed Mugabe. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course our guest is Peter Hammond, and we're talking about the plight of the people who live in Zimbabwe today. Almost half of the blacks have fled the country. I mean, it was only what had a population of about 11 million, and 5 million have fled.
That's correct.
And, of course, with a 500,000% a year inflation, that's pretty high, you know. It costs a couple of $1 million for a loaf of bread today. And how much does a loaf of bread cost?
Well, it was $25 million two months ago. I don't know what it is now.
$25 million a couple of months ago. And, of course, this is the end result of inflation. Remember, the United States insisted that we would come to their aid if things ever got out of hand. And you can see what a good job we've done. You can see how valuable the word of the United States is. And you wonder why people throughout the world hate us? Let's go ahead with what's going on there. Now, I understand Mugabe is insisting on a new election, and he's going to rig this one?
Oh, well, he rigged the last one as well, but obviously not enough. You've got to understand how Mugabe works in Zimbabwe. First of all, the government, that's the Marxist Party, controls every newspaper, radio, TV, so there's no freedom of the press. It's all just the state-controlled media. And then the secret police are in charge of running the election. So everything's run by uniformed military and police, and the secret police are actually in charge of counting the votes. So there's no semblance of attempt to have an independent form of elections at all. And the government themselves appoint a whole lot of people into parliament. No matter what the people have voted, the president has the prerogative to just appoint about a quarter of the people anyway. Then they have ghost stations and ghost voting rolls. The independent observers went along and they checked out in one polling station of the 8,000 registered voters, 5,000 didn't exist. Addresses didn't exist. And you'll never guess which way the people who were deceased and who didn't exist voted. And they all voted for the communists, funnily enough. So it was a rigged election, but the opposition was so great they couldn't even, with all their rigging, stifle the fact that a majority voted against Mugabe, even according to their own election results. And that was on the 19th of March. Now here we are at the end of May, and the government is still there that was voted out of office in the elections. And this just shows you how worthless elections are in Africa.
Well, of course, you know, the United States is still sending money over there to help fight AIDS. The United States is sending over there to help them with their agriculture. The United Nations is sending American money over there in the form of food. But that goes, of course, to Mugabe's thugs. I understand that Great Britain continues fund our good friends in Great Britain continue funding this brutal and tyrannical regime. Is that correct?
It is. In fact, Dr. Stan, I think we must make this point. Most people seem to think Africa is a poverty-stricken continent that needs foreign aid. It shouldn't be. In the 1950s, when Africa was ruled from Europe, Africa was a paradise. Nobody ever starved under colonialism, and Africa was advancing in leaps and bounds. You could travel from Cape Town to Cairo on good roads without even a passport, in complete safety. And the Rhodesians were showing the way with hydroelectric power, clean power, and with the Kariba Dam back in the 50s already very advanced, and you know you could provide all the electricity needs for the whole continent of Africa just from the one river of the Congo. We've got such potential in Africa. We've got the best in terms of wildlife, minerals, agricultural potential. Africa should be a great continent, and it was, of course, in the 50s. But now what we've seen is Africa's been destroyed, and many people in America and elsewhere seem to think we need aid. Africa doesn't need foreign aid. We need freedom. And the foreign aid that's coming to Africa is going to the very dictators who are pressing our people and destroying the economies and bankrupting these nations and burning the farms. And so the foreign aid is actually not helping the people on the ground. Very little gets to them. Most ends up in the corrupt pockets of the governments concerned who are causing the famines. If America and the European Union and the UN would stop giving foreign aid to Africa, we could get rid of these tyrannical governments and have freedom.
And
but
I think the
relief aid is actually propping up the dictators.
And I think that's what is so important for people to understand, is we are actually maintaining these brutal and tyrannical communist regimes in power. And they would not be in power if it were not for the aid from the West. And we say, oh my goodness, we've got to help those starving people. You're not helping the starving people. You're keeping the brutal tyrants, the ruthless tyrants in power. What's happening as far as medical care? Is there any medical care available? And what about the food situation there as far as the common people is concerned?
Dr. Stan, it's absolutely horrific. I mean, the only way you can help the people is one-on-one, personal, church-to-church, mission, smuggling in the food, which is what we try to do. But you can never get foreign aid through governments. Governments are actually a major part of the problem in Africa. They're not the solution. And so if people want to help us in Africa, the first thing to do is to get the governments to stop bailing out these corrupt mass-murdering thugs and dictators who are brutalizing and torturing our people and burning our churches. That's the first thing. And, of course, we can all do something on a personal, private, local church and mission level to help, and that's what we are trying to do. And people are dying of starvation. We are giving high priority to helping the pensioners and smuggling in food aid to the people who absolutely destitute. The people who are dying for lack of their diabetes medicines, and they can't get it at the hospital, they can't get it in the shops, they can't get in the post, everything's broken down. So we've got to smuggle them in and get it to them, because it's not even allowed to take food across the border to help the people. All aid must be channeled through the government of Mugabe, the Marxist. So what we do to help the people is actually illegal and at great risk.
Well, now my understanding is that the Chinese communists have some soldiers over there. Is that true?
Indeed. In fact, I think people need to realize that Red China is the new colonial power. At where the whites have left and where Europe has pulled out, China has come in. You could say that China is planning to recolonize Africa. Their men are everywhere, their businesses are everywhere, their military advisors are everywhere, their weapons are everywhere. And I don't know if you have been informed of how Red China was sending the shipment of arms that was sent as soon as the election results became known that Mugabe had lost. They sent over megatons of weaponry and rockets and RPGs and AK-47 rounds, millions and millions of rounds of ammunition. And by God's grace, our people in South Africa refused to offload the containers. They went off to Angola, who refused. But I believe they've now got it delivered to Zimbabwe. I think they went through Mozambique. And the Mugabe's just been resupplied with millions of rounds of extra ammunition from China and thousands more mortars and rocket launchers and so on to be able to, obviously, wage war against his own people.
Well, I think what the American people have to understand is, of course, the United States government, our certainly World Bank, which we control, the International Monetary Fund, which we control, the East Asian Development Bank, which we control, the Export-Import Bank we control, and American banks and American corporations are building up the military potential of communist China, so that they can, of course, send their soldiers over and their weapons over to Africa to help in the oppression of the people. And you would think that there would be an outcry in America. We're going to say, we're not going to finance that. We're going to stop our trade with communist China, because not only their own human rights record, but, of course, supporting such brutal regimes in Africa. And not a suggestion of that here. And I believe one day God is going to bring his judgment on America. I mean, not because of what we've done, but because the good people and the Christians and the ministers of this country have refused to speak out. Even to speak out, not even to risk their lives of being burned alive or being killed or raped or tortured, as they are in the government we installed in South Africa. The Christians here won't even speak out because, of course, they're too busy living the good life. And how do the people over there in Rhodesia feel about the United States, knowing full well that we installed Mugabe there back in 1980? That was 28 years ago, but it was the American influence that brought Mugabe to power.
Well, Dr. Stan, I mean, you know that I'm a friend of the American people, and I love the American history and your heritage, and we definitely learn a lot from many of the American authors and textbooks. But it is a fact that the U.S. State Department betrayed Rhodesia, and the mass murdering thugs that are oppressing our people today were installed there by Jimmy Carter and Henry Kissinger and Andrew Young's policies. I mean, this was the policy of the U.S. government back in the 70s to betray Rhodesia, who was an American ally in the First and Second World War and the Korean War, and who had always voted alongside America in the UN and the League of Nations, and who paid their war debt to America, one of the very few countries who did, and had never done anything against America. And yet the U.S. State Department made the public policy a major priority, and Kissinger and Andrew Young and Jimmy Carter were the ones who made it, so that the Rhodesians, in the end, trusting in the promises of Kissinger, acceded to the plan of the British, which was to let Lord Soames come in and take over. And all he did was betray the country and hand it over to this thug Mugabe, who 28 years later is still pulverizing the people into submission.
Now, Chris, what as far as happening in Rhodesia, as far as the industry, is there any industry left? And what about the farming? And what about the whites? Have they fled? Most of them have fled?
It's tragic. Dr. Stan, there we had something like 300,000 whites in Rhodesia back in 1980. Today, I don't think there's 15,000 left. Officially, it's 30,000, but we don't believe there's even 15,000 in the country at this moment. So this great and very industrious, hardworking people who had such a great agricultural economy and the greatest wildlife sanctuaries in the whole of Africa set up, they've been basically hounded into exile, dispersed all over the world. And it's amazing how Rhodesian farmers have been welcomed to Zambia and to Nigeria and all over Africa by black governments, knowing that they wanted their skills. And I had the president of Zambia, Levi Mwanawasa, say to me when I met him recently that he can thank the ex-Rhodesian farmers who have come over, who Mugabe didn't want. And he says, I can thank them that we have managed to strengthen our currency, double our value of our currency, and start to export food. We are now food sufficient. And he says it's thanks to a few hundred farmers that Mugabe didn't want, but he says we're very glad to have them.
And of course, the thing is that the blacks and whites in Africa can't belong fine if it weren't for the American State Department. And you have to understand the American State Department is subject to what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness. The Council on Foreign Relations controls it. And of course, they're part of this effort to destroy all the existing governments in the world and bring havoc and horror throughout the world. And of course, eventually to bring about their world government. That's the ultimate solution. And also to destroy Christianity. Of course, Mugabe, being an atheist, communist atheist, is burning the churches over in Rhodesia. And where is the outcry from our churches about the suffering of their fellow Christians in Africa? Why, it's deafening in its silence. We'll be back in just a moment with Peter Hammett from Frontline Fellowship. Well, Dr. Stan here, and Sydney, there were some of the white farmers who already went along with Mugabe initially. They thought that they could, work with him. Didn't that what happened? And then eventually they too lost their farms?
Indeed. This is one thing we find, as Winston Churchill said, those who feed the crocodile hope that he will eat them last. And that's the problem. Feeding the crocodile only makes him more hungry. And at the end, this is the problem. People who help the Marxists, if they try to sacrifice some of their freedoms for security, they get neither freedom nor security. Is that not right?
Absolutely. Benjamin Franklin actually said that, but it was very true.
I think that's correct. That's where we first heard it, but we've seen it work out that way in Rhodesia.
All right, fine. Well, of course, now, my understanding, of course, is that just across the border in Zambia, which used to be northern Rhodesia, Zimbabwe is southern Rhodesia, and of course, there's really prosperity coming into that country, isn't there, because they have an element of freedom.
Indeed, and this is a real tale of two countries, because back when I lived in Rhodesia, there we had Zambia being a Marxist nation, sending out terrorists attacking us in Rhodesia, And now Zambia is a Christian nation sending out missionaries, and it's Rhodesia that's under the communist embargo. It shows we should never take our freedoms for granted. But Zambia, I had a wonderful ministry trip there just recently, and what a hunger for the gospel. And that country is actually building and growing, and their currency is strengthening, and there's no shortage of food. And we were just commenting how the Zambian shops are full, and the Zimbabwe shops are empty, whereas it wasn't that long ago that it was the other way around. And this shows the difference that Christianity and communism make. Communism always produces poverty and frustration and oppression. Christianity produces productivity and freedom.
I certainly agree with you, and I think it's so vitally important that the American people understand that the centralized control, central authority, demand production, it just doesn't work. It didn't work in Rhodesia, it didn't work in Russia. It's not going to work, of course, anywhere in the world. And yet, of course, we're adopting that step by step here, which doesn't make sense. But then so much of what's going on in the world doesn't make sense. Is there anything else we should cover as far as Rhodesia before we get to some of the other parts of Africa?
I think we do need to be planning now for the freedom of Zimbabwe, because I do believe that even though Mugabe is still in power and he's oppressing his people, there's such a groundswell of opposition that we do believe that the people of Zimbabwe are going to be free soon. So we're starting now to plan for how to help the Zimbabweans to rebuild the country once they've gotten rid of this thug. And I'm looking forward to something like when the Berlin Wall came down in 1989. We were able to rush into Eastern Europe and minister and help and train leaders in Romania and in Poland. And we're at the moment getting ready for doing that in Zimbabwe. And our next great commission course, that's going to be one of our big goals, is training transformation teams, reformation teams, to go into Zimbabwe and help rebuild the country on Christian principles. But our priority right now is to get Zimbabwe free, but we've got to plan beyond that time too.
But what is the United States, and the United Nations doing about what's going on in Zimbabwe? My understanding is that the Organization of African States refuses to do anything. In fact, they're supporting the current corrupt regime, even though they cheated on their election.
Indeed, there are. There has been some opposition from individuals like the President of Zambia, but that's been an exception. Unfortunately, the South African ANC government of Mbeki has been a complete disgrace, and the people of South Africa are ashamed and horrified.
Hold that thought for that. We're going to be back in just a moment here. Well, there was Dr. Stan. We were simply talking about the response of most of the countries of Africa. And, of course, there is no response. It doesn't matter how many people are slaughtered there in Zimbabwe. It doesn't matter, of course. It's very obvious to everyone that Mugabe lost the election and now is killing and burning people alive and burning down churches and burning down tens of thousands of homes and beating people and raping the women so that they will vote for him the next time around. Certainly the people in South Africa, the leaders of South Africa, going right along with, of course, the communists there who control Zimbabwe today. Well, basically, you know, there's going to be another election. It's obvious that Mugabe is going to win the election. Why do you believe that Mugabe is going to be replaced? Certainly he's 84, but he could be around for another 5 or 6 or 10 years.
Well, to me, the main problem isn't just Mugabe. It's the whole Marxist thugs who are behind him, because it's not just Mugabe. You know, there was a Stalin, but there was also a Lenin, there was a Brezhnev, and there's a Khrushchev and a Gorbachev, and we know that it's not just the man, it's the entire system, too. The whole communist system is wicked, and it produces many of these evil people. But nevertheless, we have been working to undermine and to see replace this wicked government, and we've been praying the Psalms, praying for justice, praying for God to intervene, and we believe we are seeing the cracks in this whole system. You know, Mugabe's regime has, of course, collapsed in every way. The only thing propping it up is the foreign aid that's coming in. We have power failures in South Africa sometimes. Zimbabwe has occasionally electricity. They went 28 days without any electricity in the capital city. I mean, can you imagine the capital city of a country like Zimbabwe not having any electricity at all for 28 days at the stretch? Now, we believe that things are just getting to an end, and yes, the Chinese can still give the weapons and the West gives the food aid, but at the end of it, we do believe that this regime will be overthrown, will be replaced, because the people have just suffered so much, and I realize I'm speaking very optimistically there, but we do continue to pray and work for the day that Zimbabwe can be truly free and we can rebuild the country on biblical principles.
And I think we should all pray at that as well. Well, tell us what's going on in South Africa where you live. Certainly when I was there, it was a peaceful nation. They were overcoming the injustice of apartheid, and they began to integrate the sport teams and integrate the sports stadiums, and of course, even beginning to bring blacks into the white neighborhoods and beginning to integrate education. But the American State Department didn't want a logical solution. They wanted to bring a communist regime to power. They brought Nelson Mandela to power, never told the American people he was a lifelong communist, lifelong revolutionary. He gets the Nobel Peace Prize, and the people believe what they read in Time and Newsweek and U.S. News and World Report. But what's happened to your country, South Africa, where you're living?
Well,
today,
at this moment, it's very tragic, because we've got massive riots. You'd think that you're back in the 80s, and I don't know if your media is giving you the reports about it, but we have had tens of thousands of homes of black Zimbabweans who have fled to South Africa burned down by Khoza and other ANC-supporting blacks in South Africa, and they've been necklacing black people in the streets. I've got pictures on my computer of many black people, Zimbabweans, refugees from Zimbabwe, who fled to South Africa for sanctuary, who've been burned alive by the blacks in South Africa, just like the ANC did to get into power. They're now doing it, they say. It's called the xenophobia riots. And blacks in South Africa have risen up in fury against the 4.5 million Zimbabwean blacks who fled to South Africa. And they said, you're taking our jobs, and you're taking our women, and you're taking the positions that should be ours. And so they say, we're going to burn you out and kill your people until you all go back. And so the ridiculous situation we're seeing right now is that the same South African government that has propped up Mugabe is outraged over the Zimbabweans having fled from the starvation and tyranny in Zimbabwe. And instead of helping them get freedom in Zimbabwe that they could go back home, they decided to burn them out and terrorize them inside South Africa.
I have read something about that in the New York Times, although it's amazing how our major television never shows the pictures of what's going on, and the necklace thing and all the terrible things going on in South Africa. We're too busy watching Britney Spears and Paris Hilton and NBA, who's going to win the NBA. Ladies and gentlemen, you have to understand our media is controlled in America, and they focus your attention on the things that they want you to be focused on, and the really important things, the terrible tragedies unfolding in the world, where literally millions of people are dying throughout this world today, and, you know, from one cause or another. We almost never talk about it. In South Africa, 25% of the adult population has AIDS, and we'll talk to Peter about that when we get back. And the same thing is true in Zimbabwe and Zambia, and of course the band there and the eastern part of Africa. And the loss of human life, I mean, some of these countries, the average lifespan of a man is, what, 36 years, something like that. Why? Because there are so many of them are dying of AIDS. But you're not hearing about these things. You're really not hearing the truth on most media outlets right here in the United States. Well, Peter, let's go ahead and talk a little bit. What's happening with the AIDS epidemic in South Africa and, of course, in Zimbabwe and Zambia?
Well, it's very much the worst in South Africa at the moment, and I do believe that a large part of that is because of the South African ANC government's promotion of immorality, the legalization of prostitution and pornography, absolutely insane, and it's like pouring fuel on a fire. And what you've got is this absolute spread of AIDS across all lines. We've got a large amount of AIDS orphans. There's many ministries I know that are overburdened and swamped with AIDS orphans, and there's ministries in KwaZulu and in the Cape Province and in the Transvaal, just absolutely overwhelmed by the amount of AIDS orphans and the breakdown of families and just the spread of this disease. You can imagine the burden on our medical services, which really has to deal with the fact that there's very few paying the taxes and paying the bills, and there's this vast amount of people who've got to get free medical, huge quantities. And how on earth can they cope now having to provide AIDS, antiretroviral drugs? And I was speaking to the head of a government agency that deals with this AIDS crisis, and he was telling me that this antiretroviral drug, which is actually quite expensive, that they've got to provide everyone who's got AIDS in the country, which is millions of people, that it is extending the life expectancy of these AIDS patients for 8 to 12 to even maybe up to 15 years. They don't know yet, but it looks like extending their life a lot. But what they're finding is, in every case, that these people are becoming massively more promiscuous. So that where a homosexual might have had 200 sexual partners in his lifetime, his limited lifetime, because homosexuals only live about half as long as other people on average, now they might have 600 to 800 sexual partners. And the people that they are infecting now are immune to the antiretroviral drugs and can't be treated with the same one. So what's happened is the antiretroviral drugs have lowered the death toll from AIDS dramatically, and it's plateaued. But they are now seeing a vastly greater number of people, exponentially larger number of people, infected by the extended lifespans of these people who are on the antiretroviral. And the people they're infecting cannot be treated with the same drugs because they are getting a new strain that is immune to treatment.
Well, it creates human tragedy. And, Chris, I've heard they figure 25% of the adult population. Would that be low or high?
That would be the lowest, most optimistic figure, the official government figure, whereas all the people that I know, the doctors and missionaries, believe it's vastly higher than what's officially admitted.
One of the great human tragedies of all time, but then after all, Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course our guest this afternoon is Peter Hammond from Frontline Ministries, and we happen to support Peter because we think he's doing a wonderful job over there. I'd love to be going over and helping him, but at 79, I think maybe I better stay right here behind the microphone and giving a voice when he comes to the United States. And Peter was kind enough to let us know he was coming, and we're going to have him on this afternoon. Of course, this evening he's going to be on our program next Tuesday morning, and hopefully we'll get him on a pre-recorded program that will go to our 35 weekend stations. So before we go on, Peter, would you like to get your address out, how people can get in touch with you and get the material that you offer, and perhaps we hope many of them will want to support you as we do?
Yes, certainly. It's frontlinefellowship.net. That's the website, www.frontlinefellowship.net. And on there you'll get updates on what's going on and links to the different books. We've just been able to bring out a new expanded edition of the Slavery, Terrorism, and Islam book, which has been so much in demand. And this one's much bigger now with over 200 pictures and 15 maps and charts. It's got all the facts on Islam, the terrorism, the slavery, the historical roots, the contemporary threat of Islam today. So that book's now just been made available again. There are a lot more in terms of the materials. So folks want to get regular e-updates from us, they can just contact us at info@frontlinefellowship.net.
All right, fine. That's info@frontlinefellowship.net. And if you have difficulty getting through, you can always call us and we'll get the information for you. Now, when I lived in South Africa in the mid-1970s, everybody had a job. I mean, some people were doing very well. Some of the blacks were doing very well. Some of them were driving around in a lot better car than I could afford. And some of them had very nice homes in the location. But literally everybody had a job. And, of course, they subsidized milk and they subsidized bread so that nobody went hungry over there. You could buy bread at a ridiculously low cost. What's happening to the unemployment in South Africa? What's happened to the price of food? And, of course, what's happening as far as those issues are concerned?
Well, you know, Dr. Stan, I think one of the things is this whole subject I wrote about a while ago, you know, Zimbabwe, a lesson in how to destroy Christian civilization. And a lot of what we learned in Zimbabwe we're seeing happening in South Africa, and, of course, we're just not as far down the road as they are. But there's been this corrupt and conquer and confused divide and conquer. And a massive, massive increase in promoting immorality as a state policy. Nelson Mandela legalized abortion, legalized pornography, legalized prostitution, legalized gambling, took away every semblance of the Sabbath, got the Bible and prayer out of our schools, has turned our old Bible education out and has replaced it with this new age religious education, which is more pro-Islamic and Buddhist and so on. And
he sounds like our democratic leaders here.
Very much, but of course he's got to be beholden to them because they helped get him into power.
Right.
So what we're seeing in South Africa is not just a political revolution, it's a moral revolution.
Right.
And it's a disaster. Abortions and all these other evils. So what we've seen in South Africa is a massive increase in crime. I was brought up without the need for keys and locks and burglar bars. Now we have security gates and spikes and armed response, and people just wouldn't believe the kind of conditions we have to live under. I mean, my son, one son, has lost 5 bicycles stolen in the last few years. In fact, he's lost 2 just in the last couple of months, one even taken from him while he's cycling in the neighborhood. And we live in a good neighborhood. And we've had several house breakings, and we've had to chase off some people who were trying to steal our generator, which you need, of course, with all the power failures.
Don't have regular delivery of electricity?
No. Cape Town, which is the oldest and most advanced city in the continent of Africa, we have regular power failures. Every week we have power failures. And our mission has been for years now set up with our own generators and battery systems so that we can keep operating in a power failure. The other night we were having a missions rally in a town hall, and a power cut out throughout the whole area suddenly at 8 o'clock. And because these things happen so regularly, we were set up with backup generators and lanterns that within 1 minute we were back in full operation, because power failures are so common now that we wouldn't think of having a meeting in a public center without having a backup generator system.
Well, of course, when I lived in South Africa, you know, electricity was something you took for granted. We never had, did I remember,
never.
A power failure. We had, of course, all the water and utilities, and was perfectly safe in our area of Bloemfontein, where I lived and worked. Why, you could go walking at 11 o'clock at night. You never thought anything at all about it. I mean, it was a very safe society. It was a very warm society. As far as I was concerned, I went down to black locations many times. Never felt any anger or hostility towards me. I worked in the black hospital. I was the chief of orthopedic surgery there. And the cooperation between the whites and the blacks. I mean, we took good care of our people. I suspect, though, that the healthcare delivery system is breaking down now, isn't it?
Oh, terribly so, terribly so. I mean, absolutely horrific. And this affects us very deeply because my wife had hepatitis, something that you would never have got in Cape Town, a city like Cape Town. But now, when I said, how can you get hepatitis in Cape Town? And they said, well, you must remember we've got millions of people with first-stage urbanization who've been coming in from the Transkei, and they bring in the disease of Transkei into our city. So there's my wife in the hospital, and we discovered that whereas every hospital used to have a liver specialist unit, now, under the new administration, there's only one liver unit in the entire country, which happens to be in Fort Escure, because they've decided to just simplify things. So they've got specialist teams only in one hospital in the country for each team, and they have a moratorium on transplants, so that the country that invented heart transplants, South Africa, we had the Minister of Health saying you can't do any transplants. Simple. And there's my son needing a kidney transplant, and the government's trying to play games with what the medical staff can do.
Because I remember at our hospital, at the Pelonomi Hospital there, there was all for blacks and almost all free care. And in the mid-1970s, they were doing advanced heart surgery. We had heart surgery. We had great teams. You know, and certainly the care for the blacks was equally as good as the care for the whites. But, of course, that's all gone now, just total chaos. And, of course, what about the level of unemployment there?
I believe it's something in the region of 40% or more. It's very, very high. And, of course, a large amount of our unemployment is because of the sanctions on South Africa that Bishop Tutu pushed back in the 1980s, and many of the companies that left there never came back. And, of course, the jobs that were lost at that stage, we said it would create problems for the economy thereafter, and it has. But now the crime. And, of course, there was also the ANC's burning of thousands of schools and no education before liberation, which Tutu promoted, which meant that 5 million black people around today have no education. And that's because they're the lost generation, the ones whose schools were burnt down and who didn't get an education, and all they know how to do is be rioters.
Well, what a tragic, tragic situation. And, of course, really what was a wonderful, advanced, I mean, first world country, and now it's totally chaotic. And I certainly hear stories. One of my friends was in Bloemfontein recently, which was, of course, Bloemfontein meant fountain of flowers, and it was a beautiful, neat, tidy city. And he said, of course, it's just totally chaotic and garbage on the streets, and nobody seems to care.
Well, we see a lot of examples of that. And the main reason is, you know, this is what Ian Smith and others warned about, that if you hand it over to a bunch of terrorists, these advanced civilizations, they would just loot the treasury, they would be inefficient, they'd break down services, and you'd see an increase in violence and crime. And my goodness, is that not what we have seen? These folks seem to all want the job and the perks and the money as an opportunity for corruption, but they don't want to provide a service or do the job.
Well, now what's happened in Southwest Africa? Of course, I was turned over to a Marxist as well, but my understanding, it was really functioning and existing fairly well. What's going on there? It's a great, a very, very large country. About half the size of South Africa?
Well, it's bigger than Texas, and it's probably more than half the size of South Africa. I went to Namibia recently, and I must say I was quite impressed, although there are problems. It seems the German government is very, very involved with a carrot and stick approach, and they've got very big carrots and they've got very big sticks, and they're making the people run the country in probably the most efficient way that I've seen in Africa, post-independence, that is. It's the one place where the Germans are rebuilding roads, reorganizing this and that, and they're making sure that the government adheres to a whole lot of basic principles of efficiency. So it made me think, where would Africa be today if we'd had that kind of partnership throughout the whole of Africa? Because the way that Rhodesia was working was a qualified franchise looking for parity between black and white, where if you had educational or property ownership qualifications, you got the vote. And it wasn't just everyone had the vote, not universal, but it was qualified. And the partnership was so excellent. The race relations, the cooperation between the black and white Rhodesia was an example for the whole of Africa. And that's why I believe the Soviets targeted Rhodesia to destroy this productive, prosperous example, which would have given the lie to their socialist propaganda. And yet, imagine if the whole of Africa had been spared this horrible, terrible experience of the last 5 decades of communist tyrannies destroying their potential. Imagine what an absolute paradise Africa would be. And you wouldn't have to be raising funds to help starving people or give aid to Africa. Africa would be sending food all over the world, because there's nothing wrong with our continent in terms of its potential. It's the wicked governments that have been forced on us by the UN and by the State Department that have destroyed our continent.
And I think the important thing is for our listeners to understand, although the communists were always there working, the Soviets were always there working, it was the American State Department that did the job for the communists, who were incapable of doing that on their own. And now, of course, we're financing the Chinese communists that have their troops in Zimbabwe, keeping, of course, the ruthless communist thug named Mugabe that we installed, keeping him in power. So basically, behind the scenes, there's this overt and very definite cooperation between the American State Department and communist forces throughout the world. This is what people cannot be allowed to understand here in America. They're supposed to think that the communists are our enemy. Well, let's get it back to what's going on in Angola, because that, of course, country was really, of course, under the influence of Chevron Oil Company. It's got a lot of oil, and, of course, it was the Chevron Oil Company that was paying Fidel Castro's communist troops that came in there and put down the efforts of the Angolan people to develop some sort of a democratic and free society under Jonas Savimbi. What happened? What's happening in Angola today?
Well, at the moment, there's an uneasy peace, and at the moment, you've got a lot more trade and travel in the country, although there are as many landmines in the country as there are people. Interestingly enough, they're getting South African companies to come in to clear the mines. So the Russians came in and scattered mines throughout the entire Angola, and they've got well over 80,000 cripples due to landmines in Angola. This is the legacy of communism in Angola, thank you very much. Mines everywhere, every kind, from jumping jacks and these POMS mines, with tripwire ones, and absolutely nasty, horrific things. And now South African soldiers, people who used to be in South African army, are in private companies going around clearing up the mines. And I don't know how many people in America are aware that it's white South Africans who do the work of clearing mines away from black areas and saving lives and limbs in the future. It's just another interesting story, and I've got friends who are involved in that sort of thing. But yes, Angola is another example. There's a country where the people were betrayed. There's no doubt that they were betrayed. The Cuban troops came in, they invaded, and America under President Ford asked South Africa to get involved to help to clear out the communist threat. And in 1975, the South African forces poured in, and with just about 2,400 odd men, beat the Cubans, chased them all the way back to Luanda. The communists were fleeing, and at that point, Angola had been liberated. And then the U.S. treacherously, after having asked South Africa to get involved, voted against South Africa in the Security Council of the UN being involved and ordered us out. And so South Africa withdrew, saying, well, goodness me, we thought we were doing it in answer to your request. And the whole of Angola fell to the communist tyrants. And how many millions of people died as a result of that treachery, which started under President Ford, I might say. They were the ones who started by getting involved, and then the treachery was finalized even worse under Kissinger, as you're well aware.
But of course, Chevron Oil really largely funds that communist country, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. In fact, you could say that Chevron owns Angola, and we know that the Gulf Chevron was paying the Cuban troops to be there. They were very much funding them heavily, so that anyone who's supporting Gulf Chevron in America was actually helping to subsidize the communist slave camp of Angola.
And of course, what most Americans don't know is that there was a oil tanker. It was named of Rice, the Condoleezza Rice, and it plied the oil lines there in Angola. Of course, when Condoleezza was nominated to become the National Security Advisor, why, the ship disappeared. Well, actually, it didn't really disappear. They just changed the name. They couldn't let, of course, you know, that the American people know that they had a ship. With Chevron, belonged to Chevron Oil Company, that was, of course, taking oil out of Angola, in a country that the Chevron oil was keeping the communist regime in power. That wouldn't look very nice when she was the advisor to the President of the United States. But so the oil tanker, of course, was renamed, and Condoleezza continues smiling. And of course, but where are her real loyalties? And we can see where they are. We can see the price of oil today. Well, what's going on certainly up in the Congo? Because this is a country that's been torn by war. We understand that's over 3 million people have been slaughtered there. What's really going on?
Well, the Congo is extraordinary. In fact, the stats is even worse. It's more like 4 million were killed just in the last 10 years in the Congo. 4 million people murdered violently in the Congo in the last 10 years. Well, the Congo, we've actually got a missionary there right now. Please do pray for him. I think you know Charles.
Yes, I do, right.
He's in the Congo right now. He's the one who shot back at the terrorists when they attacked the St. James Church back in 1993. Well, Charles in the Congo right now doing ministry, and we've got to work on the Congo River to try and take the gospel to the people in the most remote areas, right up to Kisangani and very, you know, the heart of darkness areas. But the Congo has been a communist tyranny, a playground for the last 48 years of communism. But at this moment, there is a lull. There is a peace, there is an opening. It's not that the government has changed, but we are finding a greater openness for ministry and more religious freedom than ever before in the last 48 years of the Congo. So while there's no political freedom in the country, we have found, for some reason, an opening up for us to do ministry in the Congo, and so we're taking advantage of it. But again, how many people have had to die because of the United Nations going into the Congo and forcing that country to become communist? Because you'll recall how Katanga and Moise Tshombe was trying to secede from the chaos of the Congo and were invaded by the UN and forced to rejoin the chaos of the communist Congo.
And it wasn't Patrice Lumumba there? Was that where Lumumba was?
Patrice Lumumba was the communist who was oppressing the people.
All right, fine. Of course, he eventually, of course, got his comeuppance. And of course, Africa is really sort of a seething cauldron of unrest. It shouldn't be at all. I mean, at one time when the Congo was very, very wealthy, there were good roads when it was under the control of the Belgians, and you can see what's happened. And now, of course, we have armies fighting armies. We have armies from Rwanda in there. Anyway, we'll be back in just a moment with Peter Hammond to wrap up this afternoon's program of the tragic situation that exists in Africa today, thanks to American foreign policy. Well, Peter, what's going on over in Rwanda today and Burundi and those areas? Are those fairly stable now?
Well, indeed, yes. I must say Rwanda at the moment is quite a positive story because the victims became the victors. The Tutsi Christians who were being slaughtered and massacred in the genocide of 1994 managed to rise up and fight back, and cowards, what bullies are always cowards, just fled when they faced resistance from the little David challenging their Goliath. But there hasn't been the vindictiveness that you might have expected or any kind of reaction where they've done counter-atrocities. The Tutsi government in Rwanda has been very restrained and very much on the reconciliation angle. And so in Rwanda we are seeing justice, religious freedom, they are only prosecuting and executing the architects and organizers of the genocide, not the every single person out there who's handling a machete. They've been extremely restrained, more than I would have expected. But again, there's unprecedented religious freedom in Rwanda at this moment. But they will not let the United Nations back in there. They know how the UN disarmed them and betrayed them and stood by and did nothing while they were being slaughtered. I saw recently a film that had been done by a British filmmaker, filmed in Rwanda, called Shooting Dogs. Horrible title, but very, very realistic. The first film in Rwanda filmed in Rwanda. Hotel Rwanda was filmed in South Africa, and I could tell it was, because there was no potholes in the roads. But this one was filmed in an actual place where the UN betrayed treacherously betrayed 2,000-odd Tutsi Christians who were singing hymns in a worship service while the UN treacherously slipped out and as they betrayed them, in poured the Hutus to massacre them. And this film documents this very accurately. Shooting Dogs, it's a hard film to watch, but it's a 13V. It's not exploitative. You don't actually see the machete sitting in the flesh and so on, although you know what's been going on. But if you know what I mean, it's not the most exploitative type of film, but it's a hard film to watch. And for me, who went through the Rwandan Holocaust and documented it in my Holocaust Rwanda book, I found it traumatic to watch, but at least it was exposing the UN for what the UN really is.
Yeah, well, of course, the UN is a purveyor of murder and rape and all sorts of horrible things, and that's, of course, UN soldiers, and, of course, financed with American taxpayer money. Is that film available, Peter?
I believe so. I don't think it made it to the main cinemas. It was what they called an art film, although the quality is top class. So I think one's got to go to the video store to get it, but Shooting Dogs. British made, and the title comes from the fact that the UN were told they weren't allowed to shoot unless they were being shot at. And so when they wanted to shoot the dogs for eating corpses, the people said, oh, the dog's shooting you, because you can't shoot them unless the dogs are shooting you, according to your mandate.
And of course, Peter was just talking about this new film. We'll have to see if we can get it here. It's called Shooting Dogs. And of course, after the Rwandan Holocaust, the United Nations ordered the commanding officer not to intervene. The gentleman who was the head of the United Nations ordered the United Nations Canadian officer general not to intervene and to let these people be slaughtered. And 800,000 Christians were hacked to death thanks to the United Nations. Well, Peter Hammond's been our guest, and thank you, Peter. We'll look forward to talking again this evening.
Thank you so much. God bless, Dr.
And you too. Bye-bye. And, of course, Peter's certainly one of our favorite guests. We actually have a four-tape set called The Other Holocaust with interviews of people who were in Rwanda or went to Rwanda immediately after the Holocaust there. When, of course, Bill Clinton was telling members of his administration, don't use the word genocide. Why, if you say genocide in reference to Rwanda, why, we'd have to intervene. And we actually have those clippings out of the New York Times back in 1994. And so America did absolutely nothing. And then Bill Clinton, after it was all over, flew into Rwanda and said, oh, if we'd only know what was going on, oh, we feel so terrible. They knew exactly what was going on. But, of course, they were Christians. And that's why 800,000 were slaughtered. Ladies and gentlemen, we're involved in a spiritual battle. There are people who hate Christianity. And, of course, they're going to do everything they can to destroy it. And Bill Clinton's wife is running for the presidency of the United States. And I'm not sure if the other candidates are any better than she is. But, I mean, understand that you never hear this mentioned. You never hear, of course, any mention of the fact that Hillary Clinton, when she was in the White House, brought Sheen Houston in to conjure up the spirit of Eleanor Roosevelt and Mohandas Gandhi. Why don't we ever talk about that today? Because the media is controlled. And our reality is created by the five great mega corporations that control mostly what the American people read, hear, and see. And that's why I do what I do 5 hours a day. And I do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family so we can maintain our network of over 60 outlets every single week. Some of them are only half an hour a day. Some of them are every day. Half an hour a week, I should say, but some of them are every day. But we have a voice. And at least a certain number of people are hearing the truth that they will never hear from the controlled media. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Why has America, of course, gone into moral and financial bankruptcy? Why have we legalized pornography? Certainly there's so many things in America, abortion, sexual promiscuity, encouraging our children in grammar school to understand that homosexuality is perfectly normal. Why are these things happening? Because God has spoken against it, and of course there's a conspiracy against God. You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. Brotherhood of Darkness, where I will tell you why the Supreme Court took God and prayer out of the schools. Or you can get the CD, or you can get the tape, or you can get the audio tape of it, or you can get the DVD. The Brotherhood of Darkness is pivotal to understanding what's going on today. And then, of course, we hope that you'll want to get our four-tape set on the other Holocaust, and that we do hope that you'll want to get my talk. It's on DVD on the Forbidden Secret, because you can't understand anything going on today unless you understand that there is a secret that's been passed down for 5,000 years. The DVD comes with a syllabus we've recommended, and then, of course, we have our talk on the planned police state. And we'll actually, of course, there, if you get the syllabus, you'll actually get material that was published by the people on the other side who will tell you about the spiritual brotherhood that rules the world, the ancients of wisdom, the, call them what you will, the elder brothers, and the really demonic forces at work within our society today. And these people are in communication with them. But you need to get our material, and of course you need to understand that this is not imaginary, it's real. Because we are involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Do you really care? Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, RadioLiberty.com. Please pray for America, pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection.